Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Well, welcome to another edition of the Hubbub Podcast. It's August 2021 already. That means the summer's about over. That could be good or bad.
I'm looking forward to the end of the summer. Today, for example, it's going to be in the hundreds, so not a huge fan of the heat, but it's part of the summer.
It is. So many areas dealing with such severe heat, but it's cool in here.
Yes, you're very, very true.
Yeah.
Well, this edition of the podcast is, we gave a little teaser last month about what it would be about. I hope everyone can stomach what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, my.
Anyway, food trucks.
Food trucks, yeah.
Food trucks.
And like you mentioned, the research on this one was very extensive. It was very fun. My pants are a little bit tighter, but, it was a good time.
I guess I had a different experience. I felt like I had to force myself.
Really?
Yeah,
I did.
Okay.
I did eat things that I really didn't want to eat.
Okay, yeah.
So, but anyway, I got through it, and really it's about you. Because even though I didn't care for it, I knew it would help the listeners. So
we did it for them.
Anyway, enough of that. But nonetheless, the podcast today is really going to be a very educational one. That's what we try to do. Normally, we're talking about things that involve safety. And so although there's some aspects of safety to this, we'll talk a little bit about. Really, it's about sharing information and people being informed. So this podcast is going to be helpful if you're somebody that's, say, thinking about doing a food truck. They're becoming very, very popular. You know, what are some of the requirements, generally speaking? And then if you're the person who likes to frequent food trucks, you know, what are the things, you know, you walk up to one, you know, yeah, it looks good, but, you know, some things sometimes wonder in the back of your mind, questions. So, you know, you're going to be able to be aware of different requirements, whether it be in Hagerstown or in other areas. We'll talk about both of those. A lot of just general guidance, but, you know, what's required of a food truck here in Hagerstown? We see them becoming more and more popular, and we'll talk about how that was some good research a little bit later. So, yeah, you know, there are a lot of requirements. Before, just like a regular business, there are a lot of requirements for food trucks to open, and they can differ from each county, state, jurisdiction.
Yeah, and, you know, before we get into this research that we did, let's talk a little bit about the history and where food trucks actually came from. So the history of American food trucks dates back many years, as mobile dining and street food have been part of American dining since the late 17th century. This is where it could be found in larger cities on the East Coast. Since then, food trucks have taken a front seat in the world of American street food and are part of an ongoing food revolution. New Amsterdam, but now known as New York City, began regulating street vendors selling food from push carts in 1691. So that shows it does go back quite a long time. The chuck wagon was invented by Charles Goodnight in 1866 to feed cattlemen in wagon trains traversing the Old West. Sausage vendors started to sell their wares outside the student dorms at major Eastern universities such as Yale, Harvard, Princeton, and Cornell, and that was in 1894. And those carts became known as dog wagons. Oscar Mayer rolled out the first portable hot dog cart, the Wienermobile, in 1936. Ice cream chucks began selling their frozen treats in the 1950s. This is an interesting one here. Roach coaches, you know, they make their presence known to construction sites around the country in the 1960s. And these trucks gained the derogatory nickname partly as a result because of their often substandard health practices and their practice of setting up shop in construction lots or dirty alleys. And by the early 2000s, any association of food trucks with grime and grit had disappeared. Shiny new parks were built, especially for them in major cities, and some festivals sprung up to celebrate them. You know, it's quite a leap from the days of feeding cornpone or cowfolk on the lone prairie. So a little bit of everybody gets to benefit from them now.
Yeah, I love that new lingo you've learned.
Corn, pone, and cowfolk.
Yeah, that takes you back. Take you back. Yeah, and you mentioned chuck wagons.
Yeah.
We've all heard of those. You know, anybody who's watched a Western, you, You see them referred to that, and you even hear the cowboys talk to the cooks, calling them cookies. Mm. You know, and that's where that comes from. Those guys who would get up very, very early, they would serve all three meals during the day. And it was really convenient for those people that worked on the plains, because they would be out very early in the day, be out all day, and there's nowhere to eat.
That's a good point, yeah.
So why not, you know, this is a great idea, these chuck wagons. So these guys would take these wagons, which is basically an older form of a food truck today, and take them out and be able to, you know, cook for those guys out there and make it convenient. And, you know, it's interesting, just like today, those guys would, you know, get started very early. Unlike today, there was a lot more preparation and things that took time. So they were up in very early hours of the day, 3 a.m. or so, because they got to get everything ready, make the dough, make the biscuits, so they could be ready, because those guys started early themselves working. So, you know, these chuck wagons, that was their purpose. They were specifically designed for cooking. And within those chuck wagons, they had separate areas, you know, for storage, for washing, for preparation. And so they were basically a fully contained food truck, ancestors of our modern food truck today. Interestingly enough, just, you know, very similarly today, when we were doing our research and talking to these food truck owners, oftentimes their day starts very, very early, so they can start preparing that fresh food for the day. And really, yeah, it's a labor of love.
Oh, absolutely.
As you talk to many of them.
Yeah, it's crazy hearing how some of them would wake up early and start talking about making the donuts, which we'll get to later on that one. So food trucks, you know, they have the same type of processes to become established, just the same as a brick and mortar restaurant. And at times they might have some more regulations depending on the jurisdiction. So food trucks, you know, they typically require several employees, as we saw ourselves visiting these sites, to operate within the boundaries of the law. Food truck owners need an employer identification number, or the EIN. Every food truck business must get a business license to operate. Depending on the city and state and scope of services provided, food trucks may be charged a percentage of their gross sales or a yearly fee along with that licensing fee. And one thing to note is a food truck license and permits of an area are subject to change. So if you're looking to start a food truck, you may want to join your local restaurant or food truck association to stay informed on the changes in the laws and local government officials and how they'll affect your business. So definitely good to know if you're looking to start something up like that.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting operation, because you still have to have, like you mentioned, and can involve a number of public employees. As an example, up in Waynesboro where I live, there's Dusk to Dawn Donuts. Mm. Now they have a very small, in fact, it's a converted small pull-behind camper, and they make donuts. And I asked him, how many employees do you have? He says, we have five.
Wow.
And they're all in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, where are you going to put five employees? You know, it was like, wow. But it was really, you know, they had an efficient operation.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, it really was. I was impressed. And they do a very successful business. But, you know, whether it's an actual truck or trailer, if you've got a business on wheels, just like any vehicle, you have to make sure that you meet certain regulations. For example, like any commercial vehicle, which it may be, may have to have certain licensing depending on what that vehicle is classified. You're probably going to have some type of licensing. And then, depending on the length and the weight of the vehicle, depending on the state, you may even be required to have a commercial driver's license to operate the food truck because of how the truck is rated itself. And then, you know, keeping in mind in general, just some general requirements that in some states, food truck owners, they may need to apply for a seller's permit to purchase food and other goods at wholesale prices without paying sales tax. So, you know, sometimes people want to avoid getting the proper permits. But by doing that and taking that extra step and even that extra cost, in the long run, oftentimes you're going to save a lot of money because you've avoided having to pay things that, you know, somebody normally would have to purchasing things. And then some cities and states require one or more employees of a food truck to get a food handler's permit. That's not unusual. Employees being required to take a food safety class before the permit is issued. That's a good idea because, you know, if you're going up to a food truck, you want to trust that your food is being handled and stored and so forth in a way that, you know, just like anybody else would be expected. So, you know, that's important to be able to notice that because there are a lot of regulations. And then just like any restaurant that's required to be inspected by the health department, in many cases, food trucks also have to have similar inspections, and that's going to involve a review and approval by the local health department. And they're, again, what they're looking for is to ensure that the food is being prepared, it's being maintained and stored in a safe manner. And in some jurisdictions, even the fire department will inspect the food truck. And what they're looking for is just the safe operation of the equipment. So, you know, a lot of equipment in food trucks is run by, like, maybe propane or natural gas. Well, you want to have a safe environment in that. So they're interested in doing that. And, you know, those guys are very, very helpful. If you need help and being educated, you know, they're worth reaching out to even beforehand to talk about, hey, what's required, you know, what's a safe way to do things, and then, you know, allow them to have input when they're doing their routine inspections, when they're checking your equipment or even checking your fire suppression system if you have one on the vehicle. And it's important to note that food trucks have to meet certain regulatory requirements. Each city, each county and state, they're going to have their own specific licensing and permitting requirements. And vendors, if you're interested in doing that, you can go to the U.S. Small Business Administration, SBA for short. You can check out their website. And usually you're going to find resources that are going to tell you exactly what you need for the specific area that you're living in.
Yeah, and that's a really good idea to get on that website because, we're, you know, us doing the podcast, you know, each state has different regulations and we're not going to be able to cover each state. But since we are in Maryland, we'll go over some of the specifics for our location. So a mobile food service facility in Maryland means a food service facility that is mechanically, electrically, manually, or otherwise propelled vehicle operating on land or water that moves as part of its routine operation to change location for sales, obtain food and other supplies, fill potable water supply holding tanks, empty wastewater holding tanks, and provide for the cleaning and sanitation of equipment and utensils. You know, as we were talking, you know, each jurisdiction is a little different, but some of these items probably are carry over to other states and other local jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we're talking about food, mobile food service facilities, this does not include a food service facility that is able to be moved, but does not remove routinely for a purpose as listed above, the things that you just mentioned. So there are variances and differences when it comes to the type of business. So, you know, you want to verify exactly what you're doing when you're getting your permit. So what about the state of Maryland and the area that we live in? So just to give a little bit of background and history on some of the laws, in April 2017, it was the Maryland legislature that passed a Senate Bill 262. And what that did is that basically streamlined the health inspection process for food trucks operating in multiple counties. So what that means basically is that by doing that, it allowed mobile reciprocity. So by being licensed in Maryland, mobile food service facilities, they could move throughout counties and meet the requirements set forth in the Maryland COMAR. And the law prohibits a county under certain circumstances from requiring that mobile food service facility be inspected before issuing a mobile reciprocity license. And a county health department may not charge a fee exceeding $300 for a mobile reciprocity license. A county health department that issues a mobile reciprocity license is authorized to inspect the mobile food service facility while the mobile food service facility is operating in the county, and to take certain enforcement action against the mobile food service facility. So that makes things a little bit easier when you have that reciprocity of being able to move between counties and not have as much regulation.
Absolutely. And following that up, on December 31st, 2018, COMAR regulations were updated regarding mobile food service requirements. Most importantly, the new regulations require that all mobile food service facilities obtain a base of operations or commissary by May 1st, 2020, with the exception of those selling only prepackaged frozen desserts. The base of operations must be a licensed food service facility, have access to potable water, provide a proper disposal of waste and sewage, provide for proper utensil washing, and provide appropriate storage for refrigerated and or dry goods. And this means that a food truck business must have access to a structure to meet those requirements we just mentioned. In our local community, we have seen some brick and mortar businesses making their commercial kitchens available to food truck owners. This way they can meet that Maryland law.
Yeah, so again, nice to see that as these food trucks evolve, the state is recognizing that and they're making it more friendly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, of course, here in the state of Maryland, we are under Maryland law, meaning we have to follow the laws of the state. But at the same time, what we are able to do is pass our own ordinance for vendors and peddlers, which include food trucks. And as food trucks become more popular in Hagerstown, you know, that benefits them as well. So what are some of the requirements if you want to do a food truck in the city of Hagerstown? What would be required? Well, it would require every vendor, peddler, temporary peddler, and transient dealer to apply to the city clerk. And that kind of gives us within itself a definition when we think about food trucks. It kind of follows under that umbrella of vendors and peddlers. So if you're engaged in that type of activity, transient, you're moving here and there and you're selling, then you have to at the very least apply to the city clerk. So this definition of vendor, and that's what's important. We always have to look at the definitions. We've discussed this in previous podcasts because we all can have different ideas about what we are and what we're doing, but really what matters is what is the locality? What do they classify you as? So just to kind of further elaborate on that, in Hagerstown, a vendor is someone who occupies a fixed place of business on private or public property. Could be on the streets, sidewalks, rights of way, or public lands of the city for the purpose of selling or offering to sell goods, merchandise, or commodities of any type for a period of up to 1 year. Mm. So that's your definition of a vendor.
Yeah, that's really good to know. Like you said, you have to have that clarification of what qualifies as a vendor. And as Sean mentioned, we also require peddlers to be licensed in Hagerstown. And a peddler is a person or entity engaged in a business for profit who sells, offers to sell, or offers to purchase merchandise or commodities of any type, or solicits orders for future services from house to house or place to place, whether by the use of a vehicle, wagon, cart, pack, basket, container, or otherwise, for up to 1 year. So in Hagerstown, we have a number of events that go on throughout the year, and there are peddlers wanting to sell their goods to the patrons of those events. And for these purposes, we have a temporary peddler license, and these are a person or entity engaged in a business for profit who sells, offers to sell, or offers to purchase goods, for a period not to exceed 1 day. So it's the same definition as the regular peddler license, but just for that 1 day purpose. And the most common event in Hagerstown we receive a peddler's application for is the Alsatia Mummers Day Parade. If you're unfamiliar with this parade, we highly recommend you coming to Hagerstown and checking it out. The parade started in 1921, and crowds in excess of 70,000 people come to Hagerstown to view and participate in this parade, which is the largest parade of its kind in the East, which is really cool. So you can see how a temporary peddler's license would come in handy in a situation like that. And finally, our ordinance licensed transient dealers. So these are any person or entity engaged in the temporary business of selling or offering goods, merchandise, or commodities of any type for sale, or who displays samples thereof for the purpose of taking orders for future delivery with any hotel, motel, or conference room, or house, or other structure within the city for a period of up to 1 year. So every transient dealer's application in Hagerstown is to have a sufficient bond in the amount of $10,000 with a surety qualified to do business in the state of Maryland payable to the city of Hagerstown. So there's some of the requirements for these transient dealers and the peddler's license.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's really just a nice quick overview of the city of Hagerstown's requirements when it comes to vendors and peddlers. And again, primarily it's the city clerk that handles these applications and regulates them. What will happen sometimes is our office will help out in this way because we're out and about all the time doing inspections and things. So from time to time, you know, somebody may have the motive and they're just trying to start a business, and we truly understand that, you know, and we encourage this type of growth. But you do need a license, and sometimes, hey, we may stop by and say, hey, you know, just go ahead and get your license. We're not really interested in shutting people down. We're just trying to get compliance so that the, you know, everything can be orderly. And, you know, the one thing that has become more popular over the years, and we see it everywhere, used to be just in larger cities, but now, you know, Hagerstown and other smaller communities, they're becoming more and more popular and really having a big presence. They even have events called food truck rodeos. These started to become popular in 2008. So, you know, it's just something that's taking on. Everybody loves them. And when we look at the history of food trucks, these types of events have only occurred a little bit over the lifetime of food trucks. So it's been a slow growth, but nonetheless, it's been growth. And, you know, big cities, they've always, you know, they go way back, like we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. In our major cities, they've been around forever. And our area was lucky enough to have a food truck festival in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, back in April. And there were over 30 food trucks to choose from in this event. And one of our coworkers even went to this event. It was well attended. There was a lot of good food. So,
yeah, I'm sorry I missed that one. Because, like you said, our coworker went and said how busy some of the lines were. Like, they wanted to get in line for a certain food truck, but it was just so busy, which is good. You know, there's a lot of interest in these food trucks. And, I mean, rightfully so. There's 23,000 food trucks in the United States. And now to get in the meat of the episode, we're going to talk about some of the research that we did and going to some of these food trucks in our area. So the first one we'll start out with is Home Run Donuts. So similar to what Sean was talking about earlier with the other donut food truck, they have these huge donuts. I can't really explain it, put it into words really, but they're delicious. And I don't know what it is. Over the last few years, I'm really starting to grow to like donuts. And I think it might be because some of us bring them into the office and I get to try a bunch of different kinds. So that's always good.
Yeah, what's not to like about fried bread?
I know. It's awesome. So Home Run Donuts is a food truck in the county. So it's not here in the city, but it's right outside in the county limits there. And like I said, they are huge. They are delicious. And what's interesting is they have over 40 flavors. Now you wonder how they, you know, have 40 flavors out of this one food truck. Well, they alternate the flavors every time they open. So they keep the classics every day, but they entice other people coming back for their favorites by doing the rotation of the flavors. And, you know, the whole office benefited from this visit because we brought some back for everybody to try out. So,
yeah, I've been through there personally, and it's almost just like a drive-thru. And yes, they work very efficiently, man. And they're fresh made for you. You order, and then they make them.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Very good.
You don't feel good about yourself after you eat one, but
no,
they're good.
In the meantime, it was so good. Yeah. Yep. And our coworker, he went to the Keep It Smokin' Barbecue at the Washington County Ag Festival. They had the sweet porky sandwich, he said, was very delicious. The fries, that was a huge serving. They also serve pit beef, pork tenderloin, chicken tacos, mac and cheese, and much more. Might have to take a break here and get something to eat. I'm hungry now.
Yeah, this was not my idea. I'm just saying. Another food truck we visited, and I really had to force myself to this one. It was Cameron Seafood.
You went to this one, correct?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Seafood. It kind of describes my type of diet, too. I see food and I eat it.
Oh, man.
But anyway,
yeah,
it was really, really good food. Of course, we had the crab cakes, and they were big, and they were really good. They had hush puppies, and they had quite an operation going there. I think the guy said they actually have three trucks.
Wow.
Different locations.
Jeez, that's great.
Yeah, but in their case, they're out Dual Highway, and they don't move from that spot.
Okay.
And it's kind of best to, because they make their stuff fresh too. You order it, and then they make it. So you can call ahead. They got a Facebook page like other places. So, yeah.
That's an interesting one. You probably don't see often is seafood out of a food truck. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was impressed.
That's good.
That sounds really good. I might go back.
What are you doing for lunch today? Huh? the next one we went to was Coco's Grill. You know, and these people, they just love what they do. And one tip they wanted to give really every food truck owner is, or wanting to, if you want a food truck to cater your event, is to get a hold of them early because they book up months in advance. But this one here, Coco's Grill, is your true one-stop shop. They have hamburgers, hot dogs, club sandwiches, subs, gyros, grilled cheese, tons of appetizers. And beyond that, they have ribs and barbecue sandwiches. So there's really everything there that you can think of if you're hungry. So it's awesome to have such a huge selection, but it's also difficult to choose from sometimes. So, you know, and hopefully we're getting some more food trucks in the area. And like we said, it's only growing right now with these festivals that are popping up. They're allowing people that maybe do this on the side to pop up and maybe just do a festival here and there and see where it takes them. And speaking of that, we have the Pulley Whistle Provisions. This is from Jason Bechtel. He started out by being told by friends that he should start a food truck. The first couple of events he attended, he used a tent. You know, he had a landscape trailer and a grill from his deck. You know, this is just something he really enjoyed doing. But with the pressure from his friends, he actually went out and did it. He's had this business now for 3 years. And he states that his food is backyard food. And he starts typically cooking 2 days before an event to get everything ready. And he mentioned as well that he books up quick. So you want to make sure you get the message out there. Also, he has rubs for sale in 24 outlets across the area. So, you know, beyond just the food truck, you know, he's got his actual product in some of the local stores, which is very cool. They have a Pennsylvania license, but have not obtained a Maryland license yet. One reason is that they book up so quick that for the few events they are asked to do in Maryland, it wouldn't support getting the Maryland license. So, you know, eventually, I'm sure he will, as, you know, hopefully get past the pandemic and more events start popping up. We'll have him here in Maryland. One interesting thing to think about and that we have here in Washington County and you may have in your community is the Washington County Food Truck Finder. And this is a Facebook group. And this is how we found out about the food trucks that we visited. They share the locations or, you know, the members of the group actually share where these food trucks are located. You know, some post their monthly schedule and it's a good way to see where a food truck will be locally and what any of their specials will be. And if you want, like I mentioned earlier, if you want to book a food truck, make sure you are getting a hold of them early as they do book up in months in advance. So,
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready for lunch now. So, but before that, we got Sean's favorite part of the podcast. It's the weird news story of the month. And, you know, this one, the title is Man Caught Stealing Food Truck Admits to Crime and He Makes a Self-Disparaging Remark. I can't say what that remark is on the podcast, but I will link to the the article so you can check it out yourself. But this guy, he was at a bar. He ends up stealing a food truck. The owners of the food truck were inside giving the bar employees their leftover food, you know, just doing a good deed there. And they come out, and their food truck is gone. The police did find the guy. He was inside the pickup truck with the trailer, the food truck trailer attached, but the trailer was on its side. So he flipped the trailer, and it sustained $7,000 in damage. Believe it or not, he was under the influence of alcohol and admitted to stealing the truck. So not the brightest individual, but yeah, I highly recommend checking that article, which we will link in the description of the podcast. So,
yeah, I hate to use the cliche. You can't make that stuff up.
Nope, you really can't. And one thing we want to mention is make sure you're following us on social media. You can find our department page by searching for PCAD, City of Hagerstown. That's PCAD, City of Hagerstown. You can also find us by searching for the Hubbub Podcast. We are on Facebook and Instagram. You can subscribe to the podcast on YouTube. We are on all major podcast platforms as well. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and pretty much every podcast app out there. So, and while you're there, give us a rating if you like what we're doing. Give us a rating if you don't like what we're doing. Let us know what you'd rather see. You know, we're always open to ideas. You know, we're in going on, what, or into our third year now doing this. So we're always open to more ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah, we appreciate the feedback for sure. All right, so this brings us now to talking about what we're going to discuss in next month's podcast. Again, another relevant topic to Hagerstown as it continues to grow, walkability. That's not a phrase you hear a lot.
No, and before this job, as a lot of these topics, I didn't know much about it. I never heard that word before.
So, you know, Hagerstown, like so many localities, is not unique to this need of walkability, where that is that people can, they can live, they can shop, they can work in areas that they can access through walking. Well, there's a lot of things that really go into planning walkability. Mm-hmm. What goes involved in that? How does that benefit Hagerstown? So we hope that you'll tune in for that podcast as we talk about that topic. History of it, of course, how it relates to Hagerstown. So now our musical guest. You know, this was an impressive young lady in a business that is the music business that's hard to make it in. And so any young person that aspires to make it musically is to be commended. And this young lady is no different. Her name is Emily Lair. She hails from Morgantown, West Virginia. So that's not too far from here, but she has some nice ties with Hagerstown, musically that is. She took viol lessons here in Hagerstown. And some of her earliest memories were attending the Maryland Maryland Symphony. So she's loved music for a very long time. So she's a very gifted songwriter and instrumentalist. And right now she even attends West Virginia University. I'd never heard of this aspect of music study. It's called musical therapy.
Okay.
So she's majoring in musical therapy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so there in WVU, she's also a lead singer in a bluegrass band. So a nice, really nice sound, Emily Lair. Of course, you can find her in social media outlets such as Facebook and other things. Her music is on Spotify and Apple Music. Yeah, so check her out. Really talented young lady, singing solo and then with groups as well. So she performs sometimes in the Hagerstown area. Last she performed in Imagine Hagerstown.
Okay. I know I say this every time, but she really sounds great. I was listening to her before the podcast, and it's amazing just the talent that comes out of the area. You know, it's, they're just in our backyard. So.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we do this with somewhat local music, is to recognize these up-and-coming artists, give them a little exposure, and add to the musical culture of Hagerstown.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, that will do it for our podcast this month. So let's take the podcast out with the music of Emily Lair.
I know it's not your job to be my guide when I feel lonely. He comes to me and he tells me I'm